and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The global order is coming apart at the seams. There aren't just a few hot spots. The entire international and institutional order is in flux and collapse. Historically, great powers avoided peer-to-peer confrontations. Now, it would seem this is no longer the case. Crosstalking Global Disorder, I'm joined by my guest, Daniel Lazar, in New York. He's a journalist and author of three books on the U.S. Constitution. In North Carolina, we have Anthony Aguilar. He is a retired United States Army Lieutenant Colonel and Special Forces. And in Orlando, we cross to Lasha Kazuradze. He is an international relations analyst and founder of the Silk Road IR Consultancy. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. First of all, Happy New Year to all of you. My first question goes to Daniel. What kind of international environment do we live in which the President of the United States says he's only constrained by his own sense of morality?
Yeah. First of all, I would emphasize that that this is, in a certain way, a replay of the events of 1989 to 91, but on a far grander scale. The 1989 to 91 saw the collapse of the Soviet bloc, an emergence of a kind of a unparalleled, unalloyed international liberal order. But now what we're seeing is the collapse, the utter collapse globally of that liberal order. Trump essentially is yanking the supports out from under that order. He's gaining a momentary advantage, because he's the first one to do so, and he's also, you know, in this the center of the global hegemon, and therefore in a position to collapse that order. But he's the first one off the block. He is waging he's entering into a policy of unilateral aggression. So far, it's been very successful. But of course, we know from history that these kinds of unilateral exercises never end well, and they will not end well in this case either.
Well, Anthony, I think most of us looking at international politics have accepted that there's a sense of multipolarity right now. There only one country denies that, and it's the United States. So what happens when we have a country that is powerful as the United States, believing that it's still the unipower, but the rest of the world is accepted a modicum of international law? This is a recipe for a massive collision, Anthony.
Yes, the United States is not a superpower, and the days of hegemony are over. We are in a multipolar world, and we are far behind when it comes to some of our near peer and peer competitors when it comes to technology, military readiness, diplomacy, building alliance and coalition. In fact, we're doing the opposite here in the United States. And when the president of the United States, particularly Donald Trump, says that the only thing withholding his power is his morality, the world should be in fear of that. Of all of the characteristics I would line up for this president, President Donald Trump, morality is probably where I would give him the lowest score. So if Donald Trump's morality is the only compass we have leading this country and how we perform and how we interact on the world stage, we should all be very frightened.
Okay, Lasha, if I go to you in Orlando, what do the three countries, Venezuela, Greenland, and Iran, have in common?
Well, first of all, Happy New Year, gentlemen. It was great to be on your show for the first time. Thanks for that. These two gentlemen just basically drew up the contours of the reality in which we live in, the changing world order. What these three countries have in common, I would say, is that they're all victims of dog-eat-dog world. This is not the same international relations that we've known for the past 30 years, Trump BC. But at the same time, I would also say that even when we were under the illusion of liberal international rules-based order, even then, that was it was a very much U.S.-centric world. We've seen anything from NATO bombardment of Yugoslavia all the way to Iraq, Libya, Afghanistan. But it was all cloaked dressed up in this liberal verbiage and propaganda, if you will. But now the difference is that that has gone out the window. The liberal talk and the democracy promotion, freedom agenda, especially of the Bush administration that we remember. And now it's basically directly stating in Washington that America will act as it sees necessary and will take what it deems its own, what it thinks that it belongs to its national strategic, sort of plan. The question then becomes: did we really need any of the liberal international language and liberal institutionalism at all? Every scholar, every reporter, we all understood that behind it was hiding some sort of a U.S.-centric. Interest-based world order. Number of prominent professors have talked about this, but now this is all a naked system, if you will, where it's become a ruthless sort of domination based on politics. Or we can only wish they will determine closely which areas and which regions America has to act in, and they won't sort of go over that entire same pattern. So I think those three countries are victims of that now.
Yeah, but
I think,
this is a big question. Let me go back to Daniel. This is one of the things I'm trying to wrap my head around, because the United States is acting like a global hegemon, but it seems to be accepted that we're going to return to a 19th century sphere of influence pattern here. They're not compatible. I mean, particularly with the rhetoric that's coming and policy that's coming out of this White House. Daniel.
No, I think they are compatible. I think the U.S. is, I mean, I think the your guess is absolutely correct. America was the global hegemon, but previously it exercised its power, supposedly, in behalf of an international liberal order. Now that mask has been thrown off, Trump is a naked egotist when it comes to American power, and he's in it for America alone. What I think is coming down the pike is basically an international carve-up, where the U.S. gets the Western Hemisphere, the U.S. and Israel get the Middle East from the Mediterranean to the Arabian Sea. There'll be some kind of deal with Russia, where Russia will get the Donbass and Crimea, and will also get certain concessions from Eastern Europe. And China will have a greater latitude in the Western Pacific. So I think that is the new order that's coming down. Essentially, I see a tripartite division between Trump, Putin, and Xi. We're moving into an era of strongman international politics.
Okay, Anthony, I think that you were agreeing there. Where does Europe fit into all of this? They made themselves so irrelevant. Anthony, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the United States National Security Strategy, which was just released and signed by Donald Trump in December, clearly outlines that carving up the Western Hemisphere. The National Security Strategy calls for domination of the Western Hemisphere. That's the word that's used in the military strategy, not cooperation, not diplomacy, domination in every aspect. We're certainly seeing that. Now, where that friction point comes, that fault line, if you will, is when we're talking about Greenland. And when you look at Greenland and the president's ambitions to either take by force or the easy way or the hard way, like we're talking in an Old West movie, that there's consequences to that that Europe is not going to stand for. And when you look at a territory such as Greenland and U.S. ambition to take it, ignoring all pleas from Europe to say, hey, well, we can, you already have bases there. You can secure and expand and develop. You don't have to take the territory. It seems that the president is set on a taking strategy, which will pit us against NATO. I think that'll be the end of that'll be the swan song for NATO. And
Anthony, before we go to the break here, talking about Europe and NATO here, Trump doesn't want to negotiate because Trump sees negotiation as weakness. That's why he will take it. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, you know, for a president that wrote Art of the Deal and who ran on a platform of no more wars and ending wars of intervention and that he can make deals and end wars anywhere in the world. Yeah, he's taking the strategy of war, 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 and war. And that is something that the United States military does not have the capacity or the depth to handle on all fronts. And we will be exposed and there will be consequences that I don't think this president foresees.
Okay, before we go to the break, Lasha, is this in any way, you're in Orlando, is this America first? If it is, I don't understand it. Go ahead.
There is a big split in MAGA because of the question you just posed. This is not America first. You know, the America first was meant to be, let's take care of ourselves first. Enough with this entanglements and adventurism. So this is basically neoconservatism by other means. I would say this is not quite the Wolfowitz worldview, but this is also America's dominance, absent democracy promotion, social engineering. So. You know, people in MAGA are upset. Marjorie Taylor Greene is a perfect example of that. You know, this is continuation of more of the same in essence.
Yeah.
You know, albeit slightly modified version of it.
Yeah.
Let me just add something real quick.
Hang on. We have to go to a break here. But I would just say that Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina, is having the time of his life. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on global disorder. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing global disorder. Okay, let's go back to Daniel in New York. Right before the break, you wanted to chime in, so go ahead.
Well, I think the European...
Daniel, go ahead.
Okay, fine. The European case is fascinating. I mean, the Europeans have just blundered into a trap that from which there is no escape. They need Trump on the Eastern Front because, you know, they want him to keep on bankrolling the Ukraine's war against Russia. But at the same time, they're appalled by what Trump is doing on their Western front, which is Greenland. So therefore, they're between, they're paralyzed. They have no idea what to do. This bizarre headless structure known as the EU has completely blundered. And then NATO, remember, if the US pulls out of NATO, I mean, NATO basically ceases to exist. And NATO is a way of maintaining military order within Europe. Remember, the purpose of NATO is to keep the Americans in, the Germans down, and the Russians out. If the Americans exit, then essentially Germany assumes its position of military preeminence in Europe. We've been down that road
before. That's not a number anyone wants to find on their bingo card. Okay, yes. You know, Anthony, this is when we began the show with Daniel, and he was talking about this seismic change. We had back in 1989, 1991, the end of the Soviet bloc, and now we're in another epoch. I agree with him here. But part of this new epoch is that, you know, we've in between time, we've had the global south and the global north. Now the privileges that the global North have had is diminishing, okay? Greenland is the example. The United States, the global North should stick together, shouldn't pick on each other like that. That is a significant change right now. And the Europeans are beginning to learn that their privilege in the global North doesn't mean much anymore. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Donald Trump is single-handedly breaking the rules of Fight Club. In the North, we don't pick on each other. We don't start fights with each other. We may have some diplomatic disagreement, but we don't go to war. And as the gentleman described with that balance in Europe, that triple beam scale, as I would call it, between keeping Germany down, keeping America in, and keeping Russia out. If America's out, well, that vacuum will be filled, and that vacuum will be filled by Russian dominance on the European continent. They're already poised to do that. The repercussions of that, the second and third order effects, which will have impacts in the Western Hemisphere, where it's not an isolated region when you talk about world connection, the repercussions will be far beyond what that I think that Donald Trump as a president and the MAGA party can survive when it comes to midterm elections. It's just going to rip the ugly mask off of what most Americans are starting to see, especially with Venezuela. There was some head scratching. And now when Americans watch the rhetoric about Greenland, there's a lot of shoulder shrugs and asking, what are we doing? So,
Anthony, I agree with you. And, you know, because we agree, all four of us, you're on this program, okay? One of the things I find quite fascinating, I'll throw this to Lasha, is that this is still, you know, what we're seeing Trump doing, it has a lot of bipartisan support. We have to admit that. There's going to be a few individuals out there that are going to say, we shouldn't be doing this, it's against the Constitution, blah, blah, blah. We've heard this before. But I don't see that there is a rush against it. I mean, empires appears to be popular with people, being muscular. It's a substitution for the weakness that the average American feels as the economy transforms against them. I mean, it's bread and circuses, huh, Lasha?
Yes, that's a fair point. I mean, you know, look, I live in this country. I've been here for over 30 years. The notion that weak America nobody wants, right? Well, you know, as Americans, they, you know, anyone who is a representative of his or her own country wants the country to state to be strong. It just depends on to what extent you abuse that power. So, sort of to allude to answer your question, whether, and I wouldn't call it an empire. It's in a classic definition of an empire. It's foolishness, it's hubris. And while, you know, it's a superpower, it's a great, you know, in relative terms, it's still the most powerful country on the planet. It hasn't been able to learn that sort of these kinds of adventurisms and, sort of a global presence, the desire, that hubris that it has sort of inherited in its political culture has done more damage than good for its own reputation and for the states that import that liberal internationalism. And now it's basically, again, naked international relations, meaning, you know, and this is not even realism in a classic sense. Yes, when you read the document, the strategic document, and if you listen to Hegseth's speeches, it sounds as if this is the policy that will prioritize vital national security interests, and that's it. But, you know, what threat does Venezuela present to the United States? No strategic threat.
Well, also, Lasha, how does this foreign policy benefit the average American?
Average American, just like anywhere else in the world, cares about his or her family and to have to have money in the pocket to be able to support the family. Average American is about work and going along and get along with with his or her life. We saw this in Iraq also, when Iraqi invasion was concocted and chemical weapons story was invented. Americans were split on that. Americans, this is still an open society. People do get involved, do express their views.
Something like Iraq and Afghanistan, that's something you see on TV. Most Americans weren't affected by it unless you had service people involved here. But what I'm saying is, let me throw it to Daniel right now. The word hubris has been mentioned on this program, but the binary is nemesis. Is this foreign policy going to become nemesis?
Well, first of all, the average American is doing very badly.
That's why I brought up the question.
It's
the worst job market since 2020. Inflation is not under control. If Trump succeeds in purging Powell as chairman of the Federal Reserve, inflation will rise more, and that will hurt the average working class American very severely. Secondly, empire is not popular, but victory is.
Yes.
I mean, when Hitler returned to Germany after signing the French capitulation in 1940, the Germans went wild. And then, frankly, in Gaza, when Hamas inflicted a blow on the Israelis, popular opinion in Gaza went wild. It seemed to be a victory. And so if Trump succeeds in toppling the Iranian regime and toppling the Cuban regime after toppling the Venezuelan regime, well, that'll be seen as a political trifecta as far as American politics are concerned. And he will be much stronger going into the midterms. He will hardly have to fix them at all in order to eke out a victory. So I mean, it is bread and circuses in that foreign victories are drawing attention away from a deepening economic malaise and, I think, an increasingly unstable situation on Wall Street.
Okay, Anthony, there's a built-in assumption now in the way we're thinking about the international system. So we have the divisions of labor, spheres of influence. So it's been established here. The Western Hemisphere is for the Americans. We can talk about how much influence the U.S. will have vis-a-vis Israel in the Middle East. Europe has been taken off the board. And then you have Russia and China. Are the other great powers going to go along with this?
The simple answer that I would say is no. And they're playing the long game when you think of between Russia, between China, between Iran, Pakistan, and others, there's a lot of observation right now, observing the environment, observing the situation. What I will say about victory and that what I've experienced in 25 years in the military is that yes, victories rally, even if they're not always justified. The strongman approach often does persuade people for support. However, right now in the United States military, under the infrastructure of the Department of Defense, renamed the Department of War under Pete Hegseth, we do not have the leaders of the 90s and the 10 years ago who understand multiple wars in multiple environments to be able to challenge these rivals toward victory. I think that we look at our military might and we think that, well, Iran, that'll be a cakewalk. Venezuela, a cakewalk. Cuba, a cakewalk. But when you start stacking these things in the different environments and you're not taking into account the adversary's capability is when you make mistakes. And right now, because we've reconstructed our geographic combatant command structure, we've taken away our U.S. Forces Command and we've reorganized it as U.S. Western Hemisphere Command, which takes a lot of change. We are not postured with the leadership and the organization that we once had. And the administration doesn't understand that because they don't have the experience. They see a target. They see an objective. You get the rhetoric and the vitriol from a Stephen Miller. And pretty soon you're involved in something that you cannot get yourself out of. That's what I fear in terms of the road that we're on. Not our capability discreetly, but our capability writ large if we're going to take on multiple wars in multiple regions across the world. We don't have that depth.
Lasha, we have just about 45 seconds here. This is going to be a pretty dangerous year. Yes?
Yes, it will be a dangerous year. And I just want to allude to what Daniel said earlier. I agree with that. I think, look, American culture is about winning, right? So we love when we see, even though it's wrongheaded, even though fundamental reasons behind it are wrong, it looks good. And once you win, the whole collective psychology starts to kick in and we say, yes, we won. He was a bad, player and, the world would be better off without him. But economically speaking, I think that does not, the entire, I think MAGA has sort of you know, deviated from taking care
of the American
Maga's, it's going to be a tough year for sure.
I think Maga's in a state of collapse. We'll see where it goes. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. Fascinating discussion, gentlemen. We've run out of time. I want to thank my guests in New York, Orlando, and in North Carolina. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.